Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coast to Cast, a podcast on coastal science, where we meet scientists and ask questions that don't usually appear in published papers. My name is Giovanni Coco, and I'm today here with Alice Lefebvre. Alice works at Marum in Bremen, North Germany, and her work is a little bit at the boundary and between geomorphology, hydrodynamics, sediment transport. For sure, she loves bed forms and she loves dune fields. So definitely she's a full morphodynamicist, even though I understand that in more recent times she has been weak and she's been looking into biogeochemistry too. Anyway, we forgive her for that also because Alice has taken quite an important role in our community. She's one of the editors of the new publication that has just come out, Geomorphica, and we will speak about it. And it's one of the many reasons why we want her here on Coast to Cast. Hello, Alice. Welcome to Coast to Cast, and thanks for taking the time to join us and answer some questions.
Hello, Giovanni. Thank you very much for having me on the podcast. It's really great to be here. I have to say, I listened to quite a few of the podcast that you have recorded, and I'm totally honored and proud that you asked me to be part of the podcast.
It's definitely our pleasure. Let's get started straight away. How did you start in geomorphology?
Yeah, I started because I, as a kid, you know, I'm French, so I watched a lot of the documentary from Cousteau as a kid. And after school, I was like, okay, I don't really know what to do. And I remembered loving his documentaries, and I decided to then study geology and oceanography, which was possible to do at the University of Bordeaux, where I grew up. And that's how I came to it. So when you introduced me, actually, you're very right that I am very much in the mix there. I like hydrodynamics, like the whole oceanography part, sediment transport, and geomorphology. So how everything is linked together, I think, is the most interesting part. And also, as you said, now also trying to look a bit what happens when we put some biogeochemistry in it and try to diversify all the interactions, try to make everything even more complicated.
So you said you started at the University of Bordeaux, but now you are at the University of Bremen. Tell us a little bit about your trajectory.
Yeah, so I studied in Bordeaux, and during my master's, I wanted to go abroad. Just to learn new things and also to learn English, because in France, we don't really learn how to speak English very much. So I was lucky to do an Erasmus in Southampton at the National Oceanography Center in Southampton. Spent 1 year there first for my second year of master, and then I actually really liked it, and I was very lucky to get a PhD under the supervision of Carl Amos. So I stayed another 3-4 years. And after that, actually, my plan, after spending 5 years in Southampton, I wanted to go and do a postdoc in Australia. And I wanted to go to Perth, to Cherry maybe, and learn how to surf and all of that. And then I ended up in Bremen. I like Bremen a lot. It's a very nice city. We can cycle everywhere. It's very green. It's very easy. And we're very happy here.
As you know, here we mix questions that are about science and questions that are more about our life. How do you balance your personal life and academic work?
I think that's a very good question, and I believe that we need to talk about that a lot more than we do, because it is something which is very difficult to do. And I already say we, because I have a partner. We're not married, but we've been together a long time, and we have 3 children, actually. And that, of course, made everything quite a lot more challenging in terms of balancing our careers and taking care of the family and still managing to have a bit of time for us as a couple and for us individually. And it's a lot of things to deal with. We're very lucky that here in Germany, we can actually work part-time. And I have been working part-time, or like we both have been working part-time since the birth of our first kid over 9 years ago. And we're actually thinking whether we ever want to go back to working full time, to be honest, because part time is quite nice to be able to have enough time for the family and for work and for all the rest. So that is definitely something that we're very happy to be doing. What I'm trying to do, and I'm often completely failing at doing it is to not bring work back home. So I try to not work during evenings and weekends. It works relatively well in summer. Like this weekend, I managed to, the whole day, I didn't put my computer on. I just put it on like a tiny bit in the evening, check that everything was okay in the world, and nothing is okay in the world, and it's better to not put the computer on. But during the winter, it is sometimes complicated. I spend too much time, and then I read the emails. I'm directly thinking about work, and the kids start screaming, and I start screaming at them, and everything goes wrong. So I need to be a lot more strict, like stricter with myself, to not put the computer on. And then when I'm with the kids, I'm with the kids. And when I'm at work, I'm at work. And I think that would work a lot better for me.
What about your interests out of work?
The kids do take a lot of time, and they really take a lot of time still. They're 6, 8. My daughter got 8 last Wednesday, and 9. So we still have so many parties and school stuff and everything. So that is the majority of my time outside of work. But I'm also running, and now I just started again the training for the half marathon in October that I often do here, which then again takes a lot of time, because to train for a half marathon you have to run quite a few hours during the week, and my partner does that as well. So then we have to really have a strict schedule how we manage to do that, the two of us. And I love reading. I used to love traveling, but now I don't like it so much, because traveling with the kids is a bit more of a challenge. But like 2 weeks ago or something, we went to Paris for the first time as a family, and that was really a lot of fun.
I'm sure everyone loved it. No, your kids must have loved it too.
Yeah, definitely. Totally impressed. Ah, the Eiffel Tower. I said, no, it's the Tour Eiffel, nicht Eiffel Turm. They speak German, my kids mainly. So it's like I had to correct them, so for them to really get back to speaking a bit of French. Yeah.
Okay, let's now get back to our science. Before we speak about this new journal, Geomorphica, I would like to chat with you a little bit about your thoughts on the present situation in the publishing world. I was also editor at some point of JGR, which I still believe is the key journal in our field. And the more you know the publishing world, the least you like it, I suspect. But tell me your thoughts about the present situation.
Yeah, I think we have some really great journal, and as you said, I also believe that JGR is a really great journal. I'm really impressed with what they do. Earth Surface Process and Landforms is also a very good journal for us. I would say we're quite lucky in geomorphology to have some really good journals. Still, one problem is how the publishing landscape has been built, and that is built for companies which make profits. So you have the main two types of ways, or like the main two ways that journals are working is traditionally it was with subscription. So that was the first thing that happened, where libraries or institutions, in the end also sometimes people, pay to have access to papers which have been published. If you're in a big university, that's completely fine. You have access to thousands of journals and you can read nearly everything you want, and that works super well. However, if you are in a smaller, maybe poorer university, or if you work in a company, then you don't have access to all those papers which have been published. And that's really a shame, I think. So people realized that, and they decided to try with open access journals. And that's also a great idea, because then it's not the people who want to read the papers who pay, it's the people who want to publish it, basically. So the papers are free for the readers. However, you often have to pay some article processing charges, APC, which can be really, really expensive. It's typically at least €1,000 for the cheapest journal, up to 12, 15,000 euros for the most expensive journals. Again, I live in Germany. We're very lucky. We have a big project which is called DEAL, and that is the German universities have made a deal with some of the big publishers, and we can always publish for free. in open access. So whenever I want to publish in JGR or Earth Surface Processes and Landform or Earth Surface Dynamics as well from EGU, I just have to say I'm part of the University of Bremen, and that costs me absolutely nothing to publish open access with them, which is really great. Yeah, I'm very happy about that because I believe in open access. However, that is not available for everyone. And I know a lot of people who do not live in the northern or western world who do not have the resources to publish open access. And that's especially if you think about Latin America or Africa, a lot of people in Asia and Oceania, it's really difficult for them to publish open access. One thing is that a lot of people forget that they can also publish with the open access later, yes? Yeah? So often there is 2 years or 5 years that the rights are not for the authors, and then after a while you can actually make it publicly available yourself. But very few people know about that, and that's why it's used very little. So basically right now what's happening is that you always have someone who has to pay, either to publish or to read. And I think that's very unfair because there are a lot of people who do not have the resources to publish like this. And yeah, I would like to encourage your listeners to listen to the interview that you did with Perilio, who talked about that a lot, about what's happening in Latin America, which is where a lot of people are saying this is unfair because we don't have all the same opportunities.
Yeah, you raised some very good points. And so this is probably the reasons why you and some other colleagues came up with Geomorphica. Tell us about it.
Exactly. So Geomorphica is a community-led and community-driven Diamond Open Access journal. So what does Diamond Open Access mean? It means that no one is paying. So you can publish for free and you can read for free, and the authors retain the right of their paper. So the author can also always reuse the paper however they want. We, the journal, do not get the rights of the paper. And you can choose which exactly, you know, with which copyright exactly you want to publish. And we started this, we launched the journal just at the beginning of June. We opened for submission. And you can check our website. It's called geomorphica.org, and you will be taken to our homepage. And there you can find a lot of different information, more in detail about what Diamond Open Access is, what we think about equity, diversity, and inclusion, which is really one of the driving thing behind doing the journal. We want to provide better opportunity for everyone to make sure that everyone has the resources to publish within the journal. You can also find some detail about our publication types. And here I want to say that one of the things that we wanted to do is also provide different types of publication, not just the classic research articles, but also, for example, the case study, which are sometimes a bit harder to publish because they may be thought as being a bit less original. However, I think there is also a lot of good things to be learned by case studies. And you can see our scope. It's the whole range of geomorphology, our scope. We're very happy to have anything which is related to geomorphology. There is also some details about our review process. And here I want to take a minute to talk about our review process. We are trying something new and we're not yet sure if it's gonna work. So the idea is to try and reduce the bias. We know that we all have bias, whether conscious or unconscious. It's true, if I read that it is someone, the authors are from China, immediately I'm gonna assume that the paper is not as well written than if it's written by someone from the States, for example. I admit it, yeah, it is definitely a prejudice that I have, and I think we all have it. In order to try and reduce this, we have decided to try a triple anonymous review process. That means that when a paper comes, it is first handled by an associate editor who knows who the authors are, and they are looking for reviewers. The reviewers will not know the name of the authors in order to have to limit the bias with that. Then the authors also don't know the name of the reviewers. Okay, so that's the double anonymous. But then what we also add, and that is where it is a bit new and we're not yet sure if it's going to work. Typically, there are two reviews from the reviewers, and then the associate editor gives a recommendation on that. But the associate editor also has biases. Yeah, we know the reviewers, for example, and we may think, oh, that big professor there thought the paper wasn't so good, whereas that early career postdoc thought the paper was very good. I'm going to follow what the professor is saying, yeah, because I respect that professor. But in order to remove that bias, we decided to also have an anonymous associate editor making the recommendation for the paper. So they will not know who the authors or the reviewers are. They just have the paper and the reviews, and then they can make the recommendation, which will guide what the editor-in-chief decides should happen to the paper.
Oh, that's really new. That's completely different.
Exactly. So that's triple anonymous. Let's see if it works because it adds another step and we see if that works. Yeah.
What are the difficulties when you try to set up an entirely new journal, and also a journal that is entirely free, open access, innovative like this one?
Exactly. It is quite a challenge because we had to start everything from scratch. Yeah. So we had to look for volunteers. Everyone is just giving their time, and that can be really quite difficult because everyone is already super busy. So we had a lot of early career helping us. That means as well a lot of people who do not have a permanent position yet, and already two people from our steering committee are now outside of the academic world, which means that they really do not have the time to help us anymore. And that is a very difficult situation because the people already invested so much and they believe in the journal. And then at some point they have to say, okay, but I don't have the resources anymore to help, so I'd rather I need to step down in order to let the journal grow and maybe someone can take my place and do the work. That's really, really difficult. I have to say sometimes it's also difficult to be taken seriously because people think, well, what is that journal? You don't work with, you don't have any big names as your editor-in-chief or associate editors, and we don't know you. You don't have even an impact factor yet. So why should I publish with you? And here, I think one of the nice things that we have is that we have a team of mentors in our editorial team with luckily some big names. So like Martin Kleinhans is very active and has been really helping us a lot, also providing all his knowledge of the field. And I think he really provides a bit of, if you want, credibility or something, yeah, because he's believing in us and he's well known and saying this is a good action, so that helps us. We do not have any funding, so we have to do everything, and we have to at some point get a bit of money to go to conferences, for example, and things like that. So now we have a collaboration which is just being agreed with the International Association of Geomorphologists, IAG, and we're very happy to have set up that association with them. And we are supported by the Penn State University libraries in who are hosting our website, and we're like incredibly grateful of all the work they've been doing with us because setting up that website was, oh my God, that was so much work. Yeah.
I bet for sure, but it's absolutely great, and it's great that I'm sure you will get more and more support from people. Although I imagine the first stages will be difficult because of that thing. Oh, but you don't have the impact factor. And unfortunately, we're all a bit slave to that. But I'm sure Geomorphica will have a bright future. Let's go a little bit more now into your research. Tell us about your favorite paper or a paper that changed your career.
I'm not going to go first in my research. First, I'm going to say another thing about the publishing world because, still about Geomorphica, one thing that is really changing in terms of the papers for me is reading the editorial of our sister journals. Here, I want to do some advertising because, luckily for us, we're not the first diamond open access journals in the fields of geoscience. We're very, very, very lucky to be part of the so-called Guild of Diamond. And that is made up from some people who started the initiative of doing the Diamond Open Access Journal in Geosciences. And that started in 2017 with Volcanica, and then later Tectonica, Seismica, and Sedimentologica came, and now we're the little ones, Geomorphica. But we know that other ones are being prepared, so the guild is just growing and growing. And for me, reading their editorials, how they did the whole thing, really helped me make that process of starting Geomorphica a lot smoother and easier. And we're so, so grateful of the help that they have provided, because they really have that open access spirit with them, and they provided us with all their workflows, how they did things, which made the process a lot faster for us. In terms of science, I'm still gonna reply, because for me, one of my favorite paper, you said I like bed forms a lot, especially at the moment, estuarine dunes. And a paper from Dalrymple and Brodess from 1995 is one of my favorite. I keep on reading it, and it's like a very thick paper. It's like 30 pages or something. But every time I read it, I'm just like, oh, but they knew already everything. I'm just not discovering anything. I'm just doing a tiny bit of precision of what they already knew, oh, like 25 years ago. So I'm always amazed at how much was already known much before my time.
Yeah, it's a great paper. I know that paper for sure. But I'm actually now quite curious, and I will go and look for those editorials from those other journals, Sedimentologica, Tectonica. Well, I think it's something that was bound to happen in our field. The situation with those journals making so much money. Some of those journals really are just out there to get our work, and they get the copyright, they get how we can use our figures, which I always found incredible. We cannot put the PDFs on our research websites. It's always felt like those companies are actually abusing us. And it's great that the community has responded and that more and more of these journals are appearing. I think it's fantastic. I think we should all read some of these editorials.
Yeah, so, and when you think about the companies as well, because it's not only the authors who are giving their time for free, but all the reviewers, right? And we know that we're all asked all the time to do reviews, and we can't do all the reviews, but that's because there are so many journals who have to publish so quickly in order to basically make more money. And those are really the predatory journal that I'm talking about, yeah, not the well-respected journal, who, you know, they give you 1 week to review a paper or things like that. And that's really a sign that this is not a sustainable model. Basically, I really believe that the publishing world that we have right now is not sustainable, like so much of our society, to be honest. But that is also one way that shows it cannot go on the way we're doing it.
And I assume at Geomorphica you will be happy to receive papers on coastal geomorphology too.
Yeah, of course, definitely, definitely.
So all our listeners, go and check Geomorphica and submit your latest work to this new journal. Let's support our community. Okay, now maybe, Alice, do you want to tell us something, a research topic you're working on at the moment, the research question that is particularly exciting you at present?
Yeah, so I'm working a lot on underwater dunes, like you said, and one of the things that I'm thinking on about at the moment is actually how we can manage to make our definitions, or how we describe things, in a way that is more useful for other people. So if we think about large flow transverse bed forms, there was that paper from Ashley in 1990, very famous paper, where she described how the large-scale underwater bed forms can be named. And since then, actually, people keep on using all kind of terms. So it can be dunes, sand wave, sediment wave, mega ripples. It can be a range of things. And I think sometimes it still creates a lot of confusion. Are we talking about the same thing, or are they created by different mechanism, and are they intrinsically something different? In the end, I don't care which name we use. I think if we at least manage to agree how we describe them, what are the key parameters which can make me think, okay, actually a sand wave is the same as a tidal dune, for example, then we can make some progress with how we can link what other researchers are doing to our own research. I think that goes a bit with the thing of open access research, because now more and more of the data set that we produce are to be made open access. This is a requirement from a lot of the funding companies, not companies, but agencies. So for us, the DFG in Germany requires that we make our data set available. A lot of the authorities, like who are in charge, for example, of the water depth in the waterways, have to also make those data available. So we have more and more data available. But if we all look at it from a different aspect and not describing what we see in a way that other people can also use, then I think we're losing a lot of the work. And a lot of the knowledge which can be used to make something a bit better as an ensemble, yeah? So try to bring the community a bit better together would really help with making progress in the research.
What's your take on machine learning? Do you use it? Do you like it?
That's a difficult question. I guess I'm not there yet. I think with respect to the big data sets, we're going to have to find ways of dealing with so much data. It's just so much data, it gets a bit crazy. And there we might have to really learn how to use machine learning. Now I want to go back to Geomorphica, because in terms of publishing, we also have to deal with that, with, you know, things like Chat GPT and things like that. Now people can use special software to either write the whole paper or rewrite parts of the paper. And I think that is still very, very problematic, because all those softwares cannot work unsupervised. I believe maybe they can be useful to rewrite things, because it's true, we don't have the same level of English. Sometimes it's difficult for us to express ourselves correctly. And if the English is not really good enough, then the reviewers are going to complain about it, and it's going to be harder to get published. So that's a problem. But how those softwares are used, even to just rework the text, can be very, very tricky, because we cannot trust them. They are not scientists. Yeah. So for now, with Geomorphica, we decided that we would prefer if they are not used. However, we cannot check if they are used or not, because this is uncheckable. Yeah, you can't check that. So we just have to believe that the author who published to Geomorphica actually wrote the whole paper themselves.
And hopefully that's the case. Can you predict a major advance to happen in our field in the next 5 years? I used to ask in the next 50 years. Little by little, I realized 50 years is just too crazy. So just trying to predict an advance in the next 5 years is difficult enough. So let's try with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I will give you an answer with really in terms of the science itself, but I think we're getting towards very large open data sets. And that's what's really going to change a lot of it. I can see that has already changed since I did my PhD, yeah, 15 years ago. Now we have more and more data available for everyone to work on, and those data sets are getting huge. So that is going to be the big challenge, how we deal with those large data sets, how we collaborate to work on them, how to deal with open science, when do we make the data set available. That still needs to be think about properly, and to be done, yeah, in a way which is satisfying for everyone. Because I think there is a great opportunity for people who do not have the resources to go and do cruises and acquire data, or who do not have flumes, for example, to get super great data. So that's a real opportunity, and that can really remove a bit of the barriers that we have currently in the scientific world, in terms of the resources that we have. So we have to embrace open science, I think, and make sure that those people who are collecting the data provide them in a way which is fair for them, that they feel okay providing the data for everyone, in order for other people to also have enough data with which they can work.
Totally agree, and in this sense, I also have to say that modelers in this area are actually quite good, because compared to the days when I started, now we all share models. Models are always available, from very complicated, detailed ones to large scale models. I think modelers are doing a good job here in terms of open science. And now a personal question for you. Best or worst advice you ever received?
I'll go with the best. That was from my PhD supervisor, Carl Amos. And he told me, Alice, if you're stuck with something, if at some point you're just a bit like, you don't know what the next step is going to be, if you're stuck with writing a paper or your thesis, or you don't know what's going to be the next thing that you want to do, you just read some papers. You just sit down and you find some papers that you want to read. And by reading, that's gonna open up your mind, and then you're gonna get new ideas. And I still do that even now. Sometimes I'm just like, I'm blocked. Yeah, I hope we all get it up that I'm not the only one being blocked like this
I
sometimes, where I
definitely do. I
just
definitely do. I'm with you.
okay, thanks. Because I don't know what to do next. I'm stuck. Yeah, and then I read some papers that I have always wanted to read, or sometimes I reread old paper that Dalrymple and Broaddus from 95, and then that gives me idea again. So that thing, if you're stuck, sit down and read, and you'll feel better.
That's a great one. I would expect nothing less from Carl Amos. Some quick questions now. What's your favorite band or type of music or composer?
So since we have the kids, I don't listen to a lot of music. My partner puts the music at home, but I often tell him to just switch it off because it's already loud enough. Please, I need some calm and quiet sometimes. But sometimes when I run, I listen to a lot of podcasts first, but sometimes I also listen to just some old school French songs. And that's going to be also a lot of old school hip hop because that's what my brother used to make me listen to when we were teenagers.
Ah, okay. So now me, I was thinking of Charles Trenet, Jacques Brel. No.
No,
All
no, no.
music is still hip hop,
Yeah,
definitely.
exactly. Yeah, like I am, NTM, like, yeah.
Okay. Do you cook, and what's your favorite dish, or do you have a signature dish?
I cook a lot, like, I'm the only one allowed to cook. My partner is Dutch, and I say that the French cuisine is better than the Dutch cuisine, so I'm the one cooking at home. And I'm very happy actually with living in the UK, and here I got a lot of different influences, and I spent a lot of time in Morocco as a kid as well, so I cook a lot of everything and I love cooking.
What about I also know you like reading. What's the latest book you read, or a book that you want to suggest?
Recently I read again most of the Asimovs, so like all the Foundation, of course, books, but also all the books about the robot novels. Yeah, they're like, I read them as a teenager and I read them again, and like, they're so good, right? Like, it's just, yeah. So I spent, I don't know, like 6 months just reading that. It was absolutely amazing. And right now I'm reading a book that my little sister translated. She's a professional translator for books. And now she translates the second book that she translated, yeah, for real, like the whole book. And of course, it's like the best translated book ever. And it's called All of Us Villains, in French and in English. I can recommend it. It's a tiny bit dark and scary. It's a young adult novel. It's a really good book for young adults. Yeah, very good.
Okay, and I think this is getting now to the end of our conversation. But before we finish, I want to once again stress out the importance that our community supports the effort of Geomorphica, the effort of this group of scientists that are taking their time to develop not a new journal, but what should be our journal, a journal that is for our community, that is really open access, and that I think is going to change the publication landscape. I really hope so. And so I'm really proud to have had Alice Lefebvre here with us to speak us about the journal. Can you please confirm that you're open for submissions, and so you're accepting papers now, and you're happy also to have papers from the coastal geomorphology world?
Yeah, we are open for submission. You can go to our website, geomorphica.org, to see our templates, the scope, what exactly the different types of papers we're accepting. And we are very much looking forward to receive all the submissions that we can have. Of course, we are doing coastal geomorphology. I'm a coastal geomorphologist myself, so that would make me especially happy to receive coastal geomorphology papers. And here I want also to take a minute to thank the members of the steering committee who have been working with me a lot in the last 2 years to build up this journal. So it's especially Roberto Fernandez, who has been really, the two of us, we've been working a huge amount to get everything together, but also Mathieu Chiamé, Guillaume Goodwin, Melanie Stamler, and Rachel Bosch. And Rachel, for example, they had to step down now because they have a job outside of academia. And despite their love for Geomorphica, they just had to say that they unfortunately cannot be part of the journal anymore. If you want to know the whole list of the people who are involved with the journal, please go to our website, geomorphica.org. You can see our whole team. I want to also point out our mentors who are really helping us a lot with all their knowledge about the journal, our communication team, who is doing all the advertisements. The web team has been so helpful with setting up the website. Honestly, I really didn't think that setting up a website was such a mission, but it's so many hours. And I'm sure I forget a lot of people, but thank you everyone who has been helping us developing the journal. Thank you to the community. Thank you to all the authors who are preparing papers to submit to our journal. And thank you, Giovanni, for inviting me to do the podcast.
It has been a real pleasure, and I'm sure we will meet soon and discuss more about the success of Geomorphica. It's a great initiative, and thank you very much for taking the time to join us and speak with us. Thank you. Bye.